There's a question that comes to the mind of some, and one that we want to entertain this afternoon. And that is, if something was an abomination to God in the Old Testament, is it an abomination to Him for all time? And that's a valid question. It certainly is one worthy of consideration. And in order to understand this, I would like for us to, first of all, look at this word abomination. Abomination comes from, in the Old Testament, comes from two Hebrew words. I'm not going to pretend to pronounce them, but I put them up there for you to see. That is a transliteration of them. The first definition here is as a noun, a detestable thing, detestation, detestable thing or abhorrent, detestable things or thing. Detest, make abominable, that's the verb. Intensely to loathe or to detest utterly. Now, you kind of get the drift of this. You kind of get the drift of what this word really means here. The other word is, as a noun, abominable, loathsome, detestable thing. Verb, abhor, be abominable, or do abominably. Now, I haven't pretended to sort out all the different reference sources I used for this because I didn't think that was, you know, worthy of my time putting it all up for you. But suffice to say that a number, in fact, is five different Old Testament authorities were consulted on this word for these definitions. Now, let's look at the usage of the second one, and you'll see why I'm starting with the second one, in the Old Testament. The first place that we want to look at is in Genesis chapter 43 and verse 32. This definition, I put the definition up there for you to see. This is the one we're talking about. The word here is used in connection with the Egyptians seeing what the Jews did as an abomination. Now notice this. The Egyptians, when they saw the Jews offering their sacrifices, believed what they were doing was an abomination. And if you look at the definition of the word, you can understand what that means. They found it as something detestable. They found it as something loathsome or something that they abhorred. No problem. This is what they felt about it. But then in Genesis 46:34, the text says, "Your servant's occupation has been with livestock." And this is, of course, talking to Pharaoh. "From our youth even till now, both we and also our fathers, that you may dwell in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians." The shepherds amongst Israel were abominations. Now keep in mind, these are things that this word is used to describe in the Old Testament. In Exodus chapter 8, verse 26, Moses said to Pharaoh, "It is not right to do so, for we would be sacrificing the abomination of the Egyptians to the Lord our God. If we sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptians before their eyes, then will they not stone us?" The same subject we've been talking about back in Genesis chapter 43 and verse 32. Now, another way that this is used in the Old Testament is in such places as Deuteronomy chapter 7, verses 25 and 26. Here it is connected with idols and idolatry. Okay? "You shall burn the carved image." Now this is always like this one here. "You shall burn the carved images of their gods," that is the false gods, "with fire, not covet the silver or gold that's in them, and take it for yourselves, lest you be snared by it. For it," what? The gold and the silver that they get from these idols, "is an abomination to the Lord your God." Now look at the definition and see how that's being used. Verse 26, "Nor shall you bring an abomination into your house." What does he mean? Well, in this context, what's he talking about? He's talking about idol gods, isn't he? He's talking about idolatry, okay? "You shall not bring them into your house. You shall utterly detest it, utterly abhor it." Are you getting the picture here?
For it is an accursed thing. That just fits in 100% with the definition, doesn't it? 100%. Then in Deuteronomy chapter 12 and verse 31, same type of situation. You shall worship the Lord your God in that way, for every abomination to the Lord, which he hates, they have done to their gods, that is the idolaters, for they burn even their sons and daughters in the fire to their gods. What does that say? What they were doing was an abomination, wasn't it? It was an abomination to God. Isaiah chapter 44 and verse 19. No one considers in his heart, nor is there knowledge or understanding to say. Now this is talking about people who make idols out of a piece of wood, okay? Nobody considers in his heart, nor is there knowledge or understanding to say, I have burned half of it in the fire. Yes, I have also baked bread on its coals. I have roasted meat and eaten it. And shall I make the rest of it an abomination? Shall I fall down before a block of wood? The same piece of wood that you started with here, you took some of it and you burned it to cook your meal. And now you're going to turn it into a god and fall down and worship it? That's what he says is an abomination, idolatry. Same thing that we're talking about in the other passages. Again, in Deuteronomy chapter 14 and verse 3, you shall not sacrifice to the Lord your God a bull or sheep which has any blemish or defect. This is talking about worship, how they worshiped God. What does he say about offering a bull or a sheep that has a blemish or a defect? He said that is an abomination to the Lord your God. So that has to do with worship. Proverbs 15 and verse 8, I'm sorry, I think I had to skip over one of these here. No, 17 and 1. Let's see, I did 14, 3, 17, 1. Yeah, Proverbs 15 and 8 now. The sacrifice of the wicked, listen to it. The sacrifice of the wicked, it's talking about worship, is an abomination to the Lord. What is he talking about? Anything that a wicked person offers as a sacrifice is an abomination to the Lord. Read the definition. You see what it means. Okay? Isaiah chapter 1, verse 13. Bring no more futile sacrifices. Incense is an abomination to me. What? The law of Moses commanded them to burn incense in worship, didn't it? Why does God say it's an abomination? Because they're not offering it the way God told them to. They're not worshiping God the way he told them to. And he says, you burn all that incense, and guess what? It's just an abomination to me. Just like when you bring in that animal that is mismarked or is lame or are sick, and you offer that to me as a sacrifice, God says that's an abomination. And, of course, man didn't see anything wrong with that, and he just went ahead and did it anyway. Now, another thing that is spoken of in the Old Testament, Leviticus chapter 18. Leviticus 18, 6 through 20, and also verse 29. And that is unlawful sexual relations. Listen to what it says in verse 6 now of Leviticus 18. None of you shall approach anyone who is near of kin to him to uncover his nakedness. I am the Lord. That phrase, to uncover his nakedness, is a phrase that refers to having sexual relations. Period. That's what it means. And then verse 20, moreover, you shall not lie carnally with your neighbor's wife to defile yourself with her. What does he call this? The Lord calls this an abomination in verse 29. Look at it. Whoever commits any of these abominations, the person who commits them shall be cut off from among their people. That's what it says. But we also understand that there are certain regulations that inherit within the law of Moses that had to do with sins with regard to the flesh. The person who touches any unclean thing, such as human uncleanness or an unclean animal or any abominable unclean thing, and who eats the flesh of the sacrifice of the peace offering that belongs to the Lord, that person shall be cut off from the people. You see how the abominable unclean thing is any abominable unclean thing. He didn't specify one thing. There could have been anything, because abominable here means, quite simply, something that is detested or abhorred or intensely loathed. That's what it is. That's what it is. And you see how it's being used there in that context. Leviticus chapter 11, 10 through 13. In all the seas or in the rivers, things that do not have fins and scales, all that move in the water, or any living thing which is in the water, they are an abomination to you. Now we got abominations swimming around in the water. But God said they were. They shall be an abomination to you, and you shall not eat their flesh, but you shall regard their carcasses as an abomination. Simple. Leviticus chapter 25, or 20, and verse 25. You shall therefore distinguish between clean animals and unclean, between birds and clean, and you shall not make yourselves abominable by beast or by bird or any living thing that creeps on the ground. Now here, you make yourself abominable by eating things that God has designated as unclean. Now that's the law that God gave to Moses. Now, comparing Old Testament admonitions with New Testament teachings. Notice now, in the old law, the Old Testament law, they were restricted from eating that which was called unclean meat. God specified what it was. We just saw it over here in Leviticus 10, just a moment ago, Leviticus 11, 10 through 43. I'll get it right in a second here. They were to treat these things as an abomination and not make themselves abominable by eating them. However, now this goes back to the original question. The things that God called an abomination under the Old Testament law, is it forever? Well, let's look and see. Turn your attention in the New Testament over to Acts 10, verses 10 through 16. The Apostle Peter went up on the housetop to pray, and he had a vision. And in the vision, a sheet was let down, and the sheet contained all kinds of animals, clean and unclean. And the voice came to Peter and said, "Kill and eat." And he was hungry. Now, notice that Peter said, "I have not done such a thing. I have never eaten anything that is common or unclean." Peter was doing exactly what the law of Moses said. Remember? Right back here in Leviticus 11, among other places. Yet the voice came from heaven and said, "What God has cleansed, you must not call common." And this was done three times. And the object was taken up into heaven again. What was God saying? These are no longer restricted to you. They are no longer unclean. That's what he's saying. This law was given to the Israelites for a reason, and now that reason is over with, and you are not under these restrictions any longer. An abomination under the Old Testament? Today is not. You see? Another thing, under the law of Moses in Deuteronomy 24, a man who put away his wife, regardless of the cause, could not take her back after he divorced her and she married another man. And the reason for it is stated in Deuteronomy 24:4. Her former husband who divorced her must not take her back to be his wife after she has been defiled, for that is an abomination. That's definition number two that we looked at, before the Lord. And you shall not bring sin on the land which the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance. Prohibition. Now, there's a reason for this. And the reason is that Moses was given the permission to give them laws because of the hardness of their heart, whereby they could divorce their wives. But God did not allow them to have a free-for-all. And that's what man would do if he was given the right to do that. Here's what was happening. Men were getting really old, like 60. No, that's not old. I'm sorry. Like 80. No, that's not old. Anyway, they were getting really old, and their wives got old at the same time. And they didn't want them anymore. Why should I be running around with an old woman? And so they would go out, dump their wives, and marry a young woman. Now, you know how that works out. It isn't very long till the young woman finds out she's married to an old man. And she doesn't want to be married to that old man anymore. So she dumps him. And now he's wanting this woman back. Hey, come on. It wasn't so bad. You're old. I'm old. Let's just be old together. And God said, you're not going to play that game with me. You're not going to play that game with me. You better think twice before you divorce that wife, the woman who is the wife of your youth. You better think twice before you do that. Did God like this situation? No. No more than he liked polygamy. But in that time, go to Acts chapter 17, and in that time you find out, in this time of ignorance, God winked or overlooked. But now he commands all men everywhere to repent. What Jesus said is what binds now, and not what he allowed under the law of Moses. You say, well, that's a lot of talking, but where do you come up with that? Well, look in Matthew chapter 19 and verse 8. Matthew 19 and verse 8. Jesus, with regard to this question about divorce, says, Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, permitted you to divorce your wives. But from the beginning, it was not so. And what did Jesus say? It's going to be like the beginning. We're not going to have that anymore. We are not going to have it. But the law of Christ does one other thing, and that is the law of Christ would have the wife, I'm sorry, I hit my button too quick, the wife who is divorced in 1 Corinthians 7 verses 10 and 11 to be reconciled to her husband. You see that? That's God's design. He doesn't want them to divorce. But if they do, she is to be reconciled to her husband. What is God's desire? That a man who marries a woman stays with her till death do they part. That's it. So there is a difference, a very marked difference. And I might add the restrictions that God put upon them with regard to marriage and divorce in Deuteronomy 24 has very often been appealed to by those who would pervert the law of divorce and remarriage today, because they seem to think, well, it was good enough for them, it's good enough for us. No. These same people eat pork. So how come they think they can take the old law to Deuteronomy 24 and apply it today, but they don't want to take the restriction on unclean animals and bring it today? That's not consistent. That is not consistent. The Lord made it quite clear what he wished. A wife is bound by her husband, verse 39 now, at 1 Corinthians 7, a wife is bound by law as long as her husband lives. But if her husband dies, she is at liberty to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. Now, this is God's law today, as opposed to the way it was back in the law of Moses. Another thing that was very interesting
I'd almost forgotten about this when I was studying this. And that is, in the Old Testament, the offering and sacrifice of the price of a dog was condemned. In other words, you shall not bring the wages of a harlot or the price of a dog to the house of the Lord your God for any vowed offering, for both of these are an abomination, definition two, to the Lord your God. Now, what about under the law of Christ? Is there any such restriction on the law of Christ? Is it an abomination to offer to the Lord the price of a dog? Well, I want you to think about this for just a moment. In 2 Thessalonians 3 and verse 10, the Apostle Paul said, even when we were with you, we commanded you this, if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat. Christians who breed dogs for a living and sell them, what do they get for them? The price of a dog. Now, what are they supposed to do with it? 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2, on the first day of the week, let each one of you lay by in store as you may prosper, that there be no gatherings when I come. Can they take what they have received, which is the price of a dog, and offer it to the Lord? No such restriction today. No such restriction. This had a particular reason behind it. A particular reason behind it under the law of Moses. And that doesn't apply to us today. Today, as I said a moment ago, Christ has all authority. We are to hear him in all things. Remember Matthew 28 and verse 18, when Jesus said, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Nothing is outside of his authority. And then in Matthew 17, we read about the transfiguration of Jesus. And you remember, whenever he went up on the mountain, he was transfigured, his face shone like the sun, and his clothes became as white as light. And behold, Moses and Elijah appeared to them, talking with Jesus. And Peter answered to Jesus and said, Lord, it's good for us to be here. If you wish, let us make here three tabernacles, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. And while Peter was still speaking, behold, a bright cloud overshadowed them, and suddenly a voice came out of the cloud saying, this is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Hear him. That's who we're to hear today. And in keeping with that, we must let the Old Testament serve the purpose to which Christ relegated it. Notice, by inspiration of the Holy Spirit, the Apostle Paul wrote in Romans 15 and 4, whatever things were written before were written for our learning, that through patience and comfort of the Scriptures we might have hope. In the New Testament, it's very interesting to find that the New Testament word for abomination, or a form of it, occurs about 10 times. And out of those 10 times, there are four Greek words used. And you see each one of them there. And I'm going to fill that in as we go along. The first one of them, of these four Greek words, simply means an abomination or an abominable thing. The second one means abominable or detestable. Notice the trend here. This one's interesting. This one's translated as an abomination, but it means literally illegal. And by implication, flagitious. Oh, I hope that, anybody else pronounce that better than me? I know what it means, though. I looked it up. It means criminal or villainous. Okay? Sometimes definitions make you have to go get definitions, don't they? And the fourth of them means, it's from a root that means to stink, by the way. But it means to be disgusted, by implication, to detest, especially idolatry, to abominate, loathe, detest, and abhor. Well, that kind of sounds like what we read over there about those two Hebrew words, doesn't it? Sounds a lot like it. Well, let's see how it's used in the New Testament, okay? In Matthew chapter 24, the definition number one occurs in Matthew 24 and Mark 13:14 with regard to the coming destruction of Jerusalem. And it says, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. And of course, Mark's account includes those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Well, what's that talking about? Well, Daniel prophesied the eventual fall of Jerusalem. Long ways back. And the abomination of desolation, to put it in real simple terms for everybody to understand, when the unholy Romans put their feet on holy ground and came there for the purpose of desolation, that was the abomination of desolation. It's as simple as I can make it. So, again, the word abomination simply is used in the sense of the definition to be an abomination or an abominable thing, okay? Luke 16:15, the same definition is used. You are those who justify yourselves before men. God knows your hearts. For what is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God. Things that man thinks are really important, as far as God's concerned, they're an abomination. He detests them, he finds them to be detestable. In Revelation chapter 21, verse 27, there shall by no means enter it anything, that is the holy Jerusalem, anything that defiles or causes an abomination or a lie. Here again, causes a abomination. What's that? Causes something that God detests or loathes. Okay? But only those written in the Lamb's Book of Life. And of course, anyone who's causing an abomination or a lie is not going to be found in the Lamb's Book of Life. That's the point we talked about in class this morning. Revelation 17, verses 4 and 5. The woman speaking. Now, this is the woman that is used by image to describe the Roman Empire in Romans. Revelation 17, I'll get it in a minute. Verses 4 and 5. The woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet, adorned in gold and precious stone, having in her hand a cup full of abominations and the filthiness of her fornication. And on her name was written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots, and the abominations of the earth. There again, simply apply the definition to the text, and you see how this is being used. In Titus chapter 1 and verse 16, we find the second definition in Greek, that is abominable and detestable, used in Titus 1 and verse 16. They profess to know God, but in works they deny Him, being abominable, disobedient, and qualified for every good work. You see how that's being used there? 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 3 is the third definition of this. And by the way, these ones that only have one verse, that's the only occurrence of it in the New Testament. 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 3, we have spent enough of our past lifetime in doing the will of the Gentiles when we walked in lewdness, lust, drunkenness, revelries, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. Now I want you to notice something here. Lewdness, lust, drunkenness, revelries, drinking parties are no less a sin than abominable idolatries. They're all the same. They all are on an equal plane, not one above the others. Okay? Revelation 21, verse 8, definition number 4. But the cowardly, the unbelieving, the abominable, Notice, this is talking about those who are disgusted or who disgust, who are detested or detest, especially of idolatry, to loathe, detest, or abhor. The abominable do what?
They have their part in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. Now, I want you to read something there. The unbelieving, the cowardly, the unbelieving, the abominable, the murderers, the sexually immoral, the sorcerers, the idolaters, and all liars are on an equal footing and an equal plane. Nothing is specific about one that makes it stand out above the others. And guess what? They all have the same fate. They all have the same fate. Romans 2 and verse 22. Now this is the same definition, but it's used a little bit differently. Look at it with me, if you will. You say, do not commit adultery. Do you commit adultery? You who abhor, there's the word abhor, idols, do you rob temples? You see that how it's used there? You detest, you abhor this idea of idols, but then you go in and you rob temples and you steal the idols and you burn them or you melt them down and make money from them. So really, what's your problem here? You're inconsistent. That's what he's saying there in Romans 2:22. Now, as we can see in the brief time we've had together this afternoon, the word abomination does not have any single application that would give it some mysterious meaning. Not found. In both the Old and New Testament, it is used simply to describe anything that causes disgust or hatred. And by the way, that's the dictionary definition of the word. In the case of God, it means that God is disgusted with the sins of mankind. That's exactly what it means. Whether it be idolatry, as in Deuteronomy 7, verse 25 and 26, Romans 2, 22, and 1 Peter 4, 3. Now I want you to notice. Or whether it be the offering of something defiled, an offering of a sacrifice is defiled. That's on the same plane. On the same plane as this. See? God is disgusted with it. See? Or whether it be unlawful sexual relations. According to Leviticus 18, this is on the same plane as this and that. They're all an abomination to the Lord. Okay? Or professing to know God, but in works denying Him. Try that one on for size. In Titus 1 and 16, they profess to know God, but in works they deny Him. And what are they? Abominable. So, we'd have to say then that this is on the same plane as this, this, this. They all talk about the same thing. Things that are detestable or that are disgusting in the eyes of our God. Now, let's return to the question we posed at the beginning of our class. If something was an abomination to God in the Old Testament, is it an abomination to Him for all time? We've already seen that what God called an abomination in the case of the divorced woman returning to her husband who put her away, well, that's not an abomination today. It cannot be considered an abomination for all time. And the New Testament, the woman's told to return to her husband. So how could that be? Anything that violates God's laws would be construed as an abomination before God. That is the correct usage of that term. Anything that violates God's laws would be construed as an abomination before God, and it doesn't matter what it is. No one is worse or better than the others. All liars will have their part that burns in the fire, in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone. I'll get it out of here in a second. just along, right alongside the murderers. See, murderers don't get anything worse. Liars don't get anything better. They're all going to get the same thing. Period. Along with all the abominable persons or people who conduct themselves in a manner that is contrary and disgusting in the eyes of God. Any person, this kind of goes back to class this morning, but any person who persists in sin will be found in the number of those in Revelation 21 and verse 8 who have their part in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone. And according to Revelation 21:27, they will not be permitted to enter the new or holy Jerusalem that's spoken of there. Nothing that defiles or is an abomination will enter, period. Well, that stands to reason. God's not going to allow things that he finds repulsive and disgusting and detestable to enter into his eternal kingdom. Period. I hope that simplifies this enough where every one of us have a better grasp of how this word is used. And one of the reasons why this was important is because some people in the premillennial camp try to make something out of this word that's mysterious and kind of like the sin against the Holy Spirit. You know, it's a terrible thing. We're not sure what it is, but it's a terrible thing, you know. And that's not what the Bible teaches. You know, it just, when you break it right down, it's very simple. Very, very simple. And I hope this has been something that you find informative and beneficial to each and every one of you.